Hi, this is Perry, and you're listening to episode 87 of The Beauty Brains, where real cosmetic scientists answer your beauty questions. Hello, and welcome to The Beauty Brains. I'm Perry Romanowski, a world record-holding cosmetic chemist, and with me, as always, is cosmetic chemist extraordinaire, Randy Schuler. How's it going, Randy?
What kind of records do you hold in cosmetic chemistry, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I don't hold any in cosmetic chemistry, but I do hold a world record, so I can get the title world record holding cosmetic chemist. It's, you know, they're not the, yeah.
It so, sounds like a bit of a weasel word approach, but just to clarify for the audience, because I know this since I'm the author of your biography, but what is the world record for, just so people know?
Well, I hold the world record for the fastest 50 miles done while juggling. So,
okay.
Juggling's for the future.
Okay, can we move on now?
We can. Hey, you know, congratulations are in order. I saw that you graced the pages of Allure magazine.
Yeah, somehow I convinced them to bring me on as one of their beauty experts that they consult on stories occasionally.
Yeah, I think it was fabulous, and you're in there with a picture, and then you're recommending products. You're next to all these dermatologists and doctors, and then there's the Beauty Brains guy, Randy Schuler. Oh, I thought it was great.
Well, I may not hold any world records, but you know, I do what I can to forward the cause of beauty science.
Well, great job as always, Randy.
Thank you.
Hey, today we've got one of our beauty science episodes. But before we get into that, I have a little game that I created called Robot or Not.
Okay, it always makes me a little nervous because I think you create games just to get back at me for making you lose a game. But all right, I'm up for it. What do you got?
Well, this game is vaguely related to the beauty industry. So here we go. There's this this podcast I like to listen to called Planet Money. And they've been doing a series of shows about robots taking over people's jobs. And then I saw that they have this website which lists all these different jobs and the probability of those jobs being taken over by robots in the next 20 years. Well, they had a list for personal care service jobs, so I thought I'd go through and read the job, and you can tell me if it's going to be replaced by a robot in the next 20 years or not.
Okay, if running while juggling is on the list, I'm going to say yes, robot.
You know how hard it is to make a juggling robot? I'm going to say no to that. So before I give you the jobs, the ratings are based on a few criteria, including like whether you need to come up with clever solutions, whether the job personally helps people, whether your job requires you to fit into a small space. And whether you have to negotiate.
Okay,
so here we go. Robot or not? Mm-hmm. Do these jobs have a greater than 50% chance of being replaced by robots in the next 20 years?
Okay.
A manicurist or pedicurist?
I would say that there's a yes, there's a good chance that will be robotic.
That's great. Robot, there is over a 94% chance that 94%. Manicurist and
roughly.
Pedicurist will be replaced by robots. So if if you're training for that, you might consider something else.
Might consider a job in robot repair, but
all right. How about a barber?
A barber. Wow. No, there's no way. It requires that you have to chit-chat with the person while you cut their hair. So no, I'm going to say no bot.
Well, it turns out robot would be the correct answer there. There is nearly an 80% chance of being replaced by a robot in the next 20 years. I think, you know, the supercuts people are probably working on that.
All right.
For our international listeners, supercuts is a chain of haircutteries where men can go there and get their hair cut for $10.
Okay, it's not a comic book.
What?
Supercuts.
Oh,
sounds like
right.
A comic book.
Could be. That right. Wasn't the one you worked on when you were a teenager, right?
Yeah, there you go.
All right, the final one. Makeup artists.
Again, I think the degree of artisanship is something beyond anything, you know, the choosing the color palette. Now, there's no way, 0% chance that that's going to be a robot.
You are correct. There is not, this would not be a robot. There is only a 1% chance that this will happen. So if you're going into the beauty business, becoming a makeup artist is probably the way to go.
Better job security.
Oh, yeah. You might be wondering, how about chemists? would a chemist be replaced by a robot or not?
I am wondering. Please, enlighten us.
There is only a 10% chance robots are going to take over chemist jobs in the next 20 years. Although that means you have a less of a chance of being taken over by a robot if you're a makeup artist than if you're a chemist.
Yeah, but we're already chemists, so I'm going to take that 10% chance.
All right, so there you have it. You can go to the NPR website for Planet Money and see if your job is going to be replaced by a robot in the next 20 years.
Well done, well done. Hey, I thought we would introduce a new segment on today's show.
A new segment,
We'll see how this goes. Yeah, I think it's important for our listeners to understand who actually makes their beauty products, because, you know, a lot of times a brand will be owned by another company with a different name, or sometimes will be owned by a company that belongs to a company with a different name. So you never, you know, unless you read the fine print, sometimes you really don't know who makes your cosmetics. And that's important for a couple of reasons. One is that if you know, let's say you have a favorite product, and you know that that favorite product, that brand is being bought by another company, you might want to keep an eye on that product, because that new company may change the formula. And we've seen this time and time again in the industry. I mean, we've been part of companies who have purchased other companies, and we have been part of companies that have been bought by other companies. And consolidations occur, formula changes occur. So if you know that the brand that you're loyal to is being bought by another company, at least you can have a heads up on that. And then the other reason that you should be aware of this is that it gives you an opportunity to see the formulas that you love, you know, maybe used elsewhere in cheaper brands. You know, if you know that a big company owns, you know, a range of brands from inexpensive to expensive, and you have a favorite formula in one of the expensive brands, you may find something very similar at a lower cost if you know what to look for. So very important for you to understand sort of the who's who in the beauty biz, which is the name of our new segment. And I even have a little theme music.
Oh, really?
All right, so there were, how do you like that?
I thought it was great.
All right, so there
I hope we don't run into any copyright.
That's a good point.
No, you can do like a few seconds.
I think that's how it works. Yeah. So there were a couple of company acquisitions in the news this week. The first one was Energizer. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with Energizer. They make Energizer batteries, right?
Right.
And, you know, you probably know them for the Energizer Bunny.
Of course.
But, you know, what you may not know is that they make several personal care product brands. In particular, they make some shaving products. They make Skintimate, line of shaving creams, as well as the Schick and Edge line of shaving products. And then they make a couple of sun care brands. They own Hawaiian Tropic and Banana Boat, which are both pretty big names, I would say. You know, given the fact that they've got the Energizer heritage and then they've got these personal care products, I'm surprised they never did any sort of cross promotion where they do like a cruelty-free product line and use the Energizer Bunny as the logo versus the cruelty-free bunny. Like, get it? You could.
Yeah, that's very clever.
Tie that together.
Still going.
So here's the deal. Energizer is spinning off those brands into a separate company. So it's not so much that they're being bought by somebody else, but they're actually splitting it into a new company. So you won't see Energizer anymore listed as the founding company, but they will be now called Edgewell.
Edgewell.
Edge because it's like the edge of cutting technology, and well because the products good care of you, is what they said. I'm not making that up. That's what they said.
Wait, I thought Edge was because that's their brand.
Not according to the press release, my friend.
Sure they don't want to pigeonhole themselves.
So if you're a fan of any of those brands, keep an eye on them to see if the change in ownership may result in some changes to those formulas. All right, here's the second one. This is a big one. You know, the hair care brand Frederick Fekkai.
Frederick Fekkai, sure.
The popular salon brand started, go ahead.
No, a very popular, very expensive brand, sure.
Right, I probably hit its roots in this, I want to say New York salons, maybe in the 70s, maybe. And then probably in the, sometime in the late 80s, maybe early 90s, it was purchased by Procter & Gamble. Well, now that's being reversed. So Procter, yeah, they're selling off actually a number of their beauty brands.
Right.
They only want brands that are like $1 billion or more. So they're selling off Fekkai and actually selling it back to the private company from which they bought it.
Wow.
So I'm not quite sure what that might mean, but...
I wonder if it was a good deal for them. Like, they bought it, it made some money, and they sold it back
for more money, less money? Yeah, that's a great question. So anyway, that may be good or not good news, I guess, if you're a fan of Fekkai.
Yeah.
And then finally, one more. Are you familiar with the brand Kate Somerville?
Is that the one who makes the purses?
You know, I'm not sure, but I was sort of just like you're thinking of Kate
Spade.
That was a little joke you did there.
Yeah, a little fashion joke because we are fashion bloggers, right?
I have to show my ignorance here because I did think that like she was a supermodel or something. I didn't know who this person was. And it turns out she's a dermatologist, so my apologies. And she has her own high-end brand of department store skincare products. By the way, I was particularly impressed to learn that her brand is known for, and I quote, combining advanced active ingredients with natural botanicals. Damn it! Why didn't we think of that?
Oh, man.
Brilliant.
Wait, yeah.
Anyway, so she did have her own brand, at least, because now she's sold that brand to Unilever. I imagine she'll still play some consulting role in it, but you know, it's typically how these things work. But it'll be interesting to see what Unilever does with the formulas. We know for a fact Unilever is one of those companies that tends to consolidate formulas wherever possible.
Yeah.
So Kate Somerville fans, if you like her purses and you like her personal care products, you might want to keep a close eye on the ingredient list to see what the new parent company is going to do with that.
So. Yeah, just be warned, it might not work the same.
Yeah, there you go. So there you go. There's some latest advances in who's who in the beauty industry.
Well, it's a fascinating topic, and I'm sure we'll have lots of other opportunities to talk about brands who are owned by companies you didn't know. All right, why don't we spend the rest of the show heading into our beauty science stories for the week. All right, here's a story I found interesting because it kind of goes against conventional wisdom. According to Professor David Bainbridge at the University of Cambridge, the most important factor that attracts a man to a long-term partner is intelligence. So he claims that surveys prove that men look for intelligence in the potential mother of their child, based mainly on the notion that the more intelligent women are going to raise better children. And he also says that this means that the breast size doesn't matter, really. In fact, he claims that large breasts actually make women look more asymmetric, which reduces their attraction because apparently... symmetry really is all about beauty. And then also he says that large breasts make women look older and men tend to go for more youthful women. So
wow.
So wow. I mean he doesn't really provide any support except saying that surveys prove this. And I think this kind of science reporting and science just gives science kind of a bad name, right? I mean, it's just so much conjecture with just no evidence. I mean, surveys are terrible evidence, right?
Well, I could imagine so many ways that this is worthless. Like, you know, okay, so here, guys, fill out this survey. And the question, you know, it's like, what makes women attractive to you? A, big boobs. B, smartness. Like, okay, well, all right, I'm going to say smartness. I mean,
yeah, it's just ridiculous. I mean, you know, I was thinking about this. If he really wanted to prove what he was saying, would have been better if he would look at the reproductive success of intelligent women versus less intelligent women, right? And if it were true that the more intelligent you are, the better you're going to do when it comes to finding a mate and having a family, mm-hmm. then smart women should be having more children or more relationships than less smart women, right?
Right. Boy, that's dangerous thin ice to tread on. But I see where you're headed with that.
I mean, that would be better than some survey where men said they want intelligent women versus...
Right. No, I agree. However, yeah. I think the Kardashian family alone puts the kibosh on that theory. It doesn't seem to be panning out, does it?
That is true. Anyway, if this is true, it's evidence that spending money on education will get you greater dating success than spending it on cosmetics.
Oh, there you go. Well, way to tie it back into the theme of the broadcast.
There you go.
Hey, I wanted to talk about a news story about dangerous eye makeup.
Okay.
Because it reinforces one of the messages that we consistently try and give on that show, and that message is, be careful what kind of shit you put in your eyes.
Yes. So, or around your eyes, really.
Well, and yeah, no, exactly. And this warning covers two scenarios, I guess. First is, and we see this a lot, don't use colorants that aren't approved for use around the eye, in or around your eye. And we just had a question on this not too long ago about making your own makeup from crayons.
Yeah,
remember that?
Actually, I just saw in the news, Crayola put out a press release that said, don't do this.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I didn't see that. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Well, good for them, because, we continue to see people asking about that and people recommending it on their DIY site. So the fact that, if little Junior swallows a crayon and it doesn't kill him, that is not evidence that it's safe to use this stuff around your eyes. So that's the first part of the warning. And then the second part of the warning is, even for products that are designed to be used around the eye, that doesn't mean they're safe to get in your eye. And, we've had questions about people using eyeliners on the inner eyelid. And you'll see there are a lot of makeup tutorials on YouTube that, recommend doing this because of that dramatic eye effect you can get. Well, we've said for a long time now that that's a dangerous practice, but now we've got some evidence for that admonition. This was a study out of the Center for Contact Lens Research, and Professor Allison Ng actually measured the number of eyeliner particles that migrate into the tear film. That's the little coating that covers and protects your eyes.
Right.
After they applied makeup of different styles. So now there's actually data that shows, if you put, this type of eyeliner here and it's too close to the eye, this is how much of that product actually enters the eye. And then, of course, you could have, infections, conjunctivitis, scratches, all sorts of problems. So, this is not just a random warning anymore. There's actually now data to back up that this is a dangerous process, in case you didn't believe us before.
Right. So there's, whenever you're messing with your eyes, just don't put stuff in there.
Yes, please.
All right. Well, that is a little bit disturbing. And here's another kind of bit of a disturbing story that I read.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that group, Consumer Reports?
Sure.
Well, they actually come out with reports about personal care products all the time, and they recently did a study on sunscreens, and they found that nearly one third of the sunscreens they tested didn't match the SPF claims that were on the bottle.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, they found that the Yes to Cucumbers SPF brand, which was SPF 30, they only had an SPF value of 14. And another brand, the Vanicream SPF 50 Plus, had only an SPF value of 17.
Wow.
So this was causing quite an outrage because, sunscreens are, and the ratings that they get, they're controlled by the FDA. Companies have to follow certain protocols to demonstrate specifically the SPF of their products, right? And everybody has to do the same test. But you know what the thing that wasn't mentioned in this Consumer Reports thing? They didn't follow the FDA methodology for determining SPF.
Are you telling me it didn't mention the methodology, or they said specifically they'd use some other methodology?
Well, according to the Personal Care Products Council, who looked at this report, they said that the Consumer Reports group didn't follow the FDA monograph for sunscreens for determining SPF values.
Okay, so they used a different test method or something.
They came up with some other test method to get SPF values.
Well, okay, we know that the data you get out of any given test is highly dependent on the method that you use in that test. So I mean, that does, it's like comparing apples and oranges then.
Right. I mean, it just seems really, I don't know why you wouldn't have followed the FDA guidelines, because it's
right. I mean, that's the published test. That's what industry uses. That's what the government uses. Why wouldn't they use that?
Unless you wanted to create some sort of new sensation, right? Actually, I'm sure Consumer Reports, they're a fine group, but I remember the first time that I sort of lost a little faith in them is when they had a shampoo report,
right? Yeah, sure.
And they came out with one that rated two VO5 formulas. These are formulas that I worked on, mm-hmm. and one of them was rated an excellent buy, and then one of them mm-hmm. was just rated an average. And I knew that the formulas, except for the fragrance, were exactly the same. so I kind of lost faith in their test methodology. And you know that it isn't that they tried to test so many different areas that they're not really good at specializing in one thing. So this kind of thing doesn't surprise me. Anyway, the most important thing that you should know is that you should use sunscreen, right? Despite what this says. And if you don't use it properly, then you're not likely to get that SPF rating anyway. Even if you have a SPF 30, if you don't smear it on everywhere, you're not getting 30.
That's huge.
It's not really surprising.
I forget the two brands you mentioned. Vanicream was one.
Vanicream, SPF 50. And then the Say Yes to Cucumbers brand.
Okay, so I don't know. My personal advice is also stick with a mainstream sunscreen brand. I mean, Yes to Carrots, neither of those brands are known for their sunscreen, you know, technology.
Right, I would,
I mean, so maybe going with a mainstream brand that, you know, is less worried about, you know, appearing natural and more concerned about really giving you sun protection might be another precaution.
Yeah, maybe try something from Edgewell. we're trolling for new sponsors.
Nice. Well, you know, here's something else to watch out for, speaking of things to be aware of. Watch out for oversized packaging.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, you know, one of the big drivers when you're marketing personal care products is getting good shelf space, you know, and you know that you can do that a couple of ways. One is you can add more products to your lineup in what they call stock keeping units or SKUs, so you get a nice, you know, big shelf of your products all lined up next to one another. That's one way to do it. Or if you're making smaller products, you package them in over-packaging.
Right.
You know, if you have a little jar, you put it in a box. If you have a jar without a box, you make the jar bigger. So it stands out on the shelf more, gives you a better shelf presence. Well, that's all fine and dandy, but you have to be careful because there are regulations around deceptive packaging in cosmetics. And not to keep harping on our friends at Unilever, but they were in the news this week.
Wait, that was a company that bought the company you worked for and then moved everyone, right?
Just for the record, I am not speaking disparagingly of Unilever. I'm only commenting on stories that are in the news. So, in this case, their Axe brand, which I'm a big fan of. I buy Axe products.
Sure.
That
does explain the crowd of women that are always outside your house.
they got their hands slapped for selling Axe products in jars that were bigger than they needed to be in. And they actually said that the jars had false bottoms. So you can imagine where, I don't know what the dimensions are, but if the jar is, you know, 4 inches tall, but the last, you know, inch and a half of that or whatever is just dead air space, you can't do that. You know, there are specific regulations you have to follow on what percentage of your package can have dead air and so forth, and how much, you know, how much box space can be around your package. So if you're, you know... If you're going to try and overmarket your product and skirt the rules, then you're going to have to expect to get your hand slapped. I think they had a fine of $750,000.
Yes, which, $750,000.
You know, yeah, to them is probably not, you know, big potatoes, but that's still, you know, that's significant. So anyway, so the point is, for you average consumer out there listening to the show, pay attention to overpackaging, especially when you get to, you know, small anti-aging products. You know, small little beauty products sold in a tiny jar or pump. They may be trying to use this approach too.
Right.
So just be careful.
Well, I think this also demonstrates that while we say that you should, you know, that big companies are a little more trustworthy, they aren't completely trustworthy, right?
That's a great point.
I think my stance is that when it comes to product safety and functionality, the big companies is kind of where it's at.
Yeah.
When it comes to marketing, you know.
All bets are off.
All bets are off. In fact, the big companies, I think, when it comes to marketing, they probably will skirt the law a little bit more than smaller companies just because they have more ideas and they have more lawyers that can tell them maybe where those lines are.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, well, again, look. So not only look for packaging, look carefully at your claims, everything that we've, you know, tried to teach you guys on the show.
Exactly. Hey, well, we're going to shift gears and go to a little science here.
Well, excuse me.
Well, here's an interesting story about a natural enzyme that may be causing some strong allergic skin reactions when it's included in cosmetics. Papain is an enzyme. It's used in industrial production because it's great at degrading proteins. But when it comes in contact with human skin, it can cause a really strong allergic reaction in a lot of people. And according to research, the way that this reaction happens is that the papain induces a breakdown of the cellular connection within the skin. And then this causes a loss of the barrier function, and then inflammatory cells go to that skin there and cause the reactions. It's, in fact, after about 2 weeks of being exposed to papain, researchers found relevant antibodies in work that they had done on mice. And the mice also had developed an allergic sensitization to papain. Papain actually comes from the papaya fruit. So, anyway, if you're, it theoretically could be a good natural exfoliant. Anyway, but if you're tempted to include this ingredient in any of the beauty products that you're buying, it's really not advisable, or it's not even advisable to use a papaya fruit as a natural DIY exfoliant, because you could be causing these skin problems. So watch out. Just because something is natural doesn't mean that it's good to use.
That's interesting, because it's, some people, I'm told, believe that natural is better than synthetic chemistry. I don't know if there's any validation of that. But
just natural is not better, but it's not worse, it's not better. It's just, every ingredient is just what they are.
You have to look at everything on its own individual merits.
Right.
So no discriminate. There's like a, it's like being racist, whatever the chemical version of that would be. Not sure what the term, we should make up a new term for that.
Yeah, I just don't know where you're going with this.
Sorry.
Chemophobist? What?
It's better. I'm doing my impersonation of Louis C.K. Did you see his?
Right. That was a nice topically tied in, which 5 years from now, no one will know what that is all about.
All right. Well, since you brought up the subject of things that can be irritating to your skin, let me ask you this. Should we ban an ingredient just because, you know, people are allergic to it, or that it irritates their skin?
I suppose that would depend really on how many people are allergic, right?
Well, it depends on a couple of things. First of all, if the ingredient is non-essential, in other words, if it's not providing some key benefit, or it can be easily replaced by another ingredient that provides that function, then yeah, I would say why wouldn't you substitute it out and put in something that's less aggravating? But what if the ingredient's providing a vital function, and if it's really hard to replace it with something that works as well, then it's a different story.
Yeah.
And here I'm talking specifically about an ingredient, a preservative, MI.
Methyl isothiazolinone.
Excellent.
You know, I became a chemist just so I could say long words.
I thought it was so you could have your own podcast. So this is a preservative that's long been used across the world. But Denmark now is making a push for this to be banned in Europe. And I'll put a link to this in our show notes, but our good friend Colin Sanders wrote an excellent article on this, why he explained why banning this ingredient may not be the best approach. He actually did a nice little video on that too, so like I said, I'll link to that in the show notes. In fact, Colin has been doing such an excellent job lately, we've quoted him a number of times on the show. I'm actually thinking about replacing you with him.
What?
We're in preliminary talks right now. The sticking point seems to be that he refuses to work with Chance. As soon as we can get through those details, I think we'll. Well, anyway, stay tuned for more.
Hey, let me ask you: can he juggle?
As soon as he gets a world record of some sort, he's on the show. Damn it!
I'll tell you what: I'm going to work on a British accent. Would you like a spot? I'll take. If you need an accent, I can do accents.
I was looking more for, you know, scientific credentials, but that's okay. Keep working. All right. Okay, so I won't do as good a job as Colin did, but let me kind of sort of quickly summarize 3 points why we shouldn't necessarily ban something just because it's an allergen. So point number one, this is a well-known allergen. And, you know, it is listed on the package because it's part of the ingredient listing.
Right.
But if you've ever tried to read an ingredient list, it's tough, even for chemists sometimes. So maybe instead of banning the ingredient, we could call it out on the front of the package, you know, caution contains this allergen, just so people would know. So in that case, labeling may go a long way towards protecting people. Point number two is just, you know, if we don't have a very good replacement for this preservative, we could just be going from the frying pan into the fire. What I mean by that is, you know, people have very few allergic reactions right now. It doesn't happen very often, but we even have fewer problems with microbial contamination. And if we went to another preservative that, let's say, had less of a chance to cause an allergic reaction, it's not going to protect as well because we don't have that many good alternate preservatives.
Right.
So you can have other problems where people could be getting, you know, skin and eye infections because the product wasn't properly preserved. So you need to be careful. And then lastly, you know, if you do go to another preservative that right now has a lower allergic response and you start to use that more, you may start to see a greater incidence of allergic response in the population. So you're not necessarily really making an improvement for people. So, like I said, Colin did a much better job than I just did of summarizing that point, but it's an excellent analysis of why you don't necessarily just ban something because there's a problem with it. It's a little more complicated than that.
And even when you switch to something that is less allergic causing to less people, so now you just have different people who are allergic to your product, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I like that that labeling idea, and you're right, trying to read a list of ingredients, because right now you're supposed, there are fragrance ingredients where you're supposed to list the potential allergens there too. There's 26 of them. I think what might make sense is if maybe you have you separate them out from the standard list of ingredients, right? So you could say potential irritants or potential allergens and just make that list there.
Put it in a box with a bold heading or something to set it off a little bit. I mean, I know that's a challenge because there's so much crap on the labels to begin with.
Right.
But, I mean, that people could really benefit from that change in labeling.
Exactly. Hey, Randy, I know you're a big fan of Apple, and you're also draped with tattoos. did you know that that tattoos on your body might actually be interfering with the function of that nifty new Apple Watch you have?
Mm-hmm, I did see that.
If you do have a new Apple Watch and you have a wrist tattoo, it's interesting that the ink from your tattoo can interfere with some of the sensors in the watch. So if you that heart sensor, your product might the watch isn't going to work correctly. And it might also interfere with placing calls, receiving your notifications, or a bunch of other stuff. So it really sounds kind of horrible. And so it might be a reason for you to get rid of it.
Actually, wait. No. It's just the heart sensor. It has nothing to do with the Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, which picks up the messages and everything.
I'm telling you, the story from CNN said that it could also interfere with your ability to place calls, receive your notifications, and other apps. So,
yeah, that makes no sense.
It was in the news.
All right, I'm calling BS on that.
Hey, you know, we forgot to mention.
What's that?
That we have a book out called It's Okay to Have Lead in Your Lipstick.
And answers to other beauty questions you're dying to know.
Yeah, you can get that at our website or through Amazon or other places you can get books online. So please feel free to check that out. Also, feel free to leave us a review on iTunes. Although,
yes,
let me
please
say, I don't want you to leave a review based on the quality of today's show.
Overall, big picture.
Sure.
Big picture.
Exactly. And we're on social media, too. Please follow
Facebook,
us.
Facebook, Twitter.
Right. Sure. We're the Beauty Brains on Twitter.
Pinterest.
We're still on Pinterest?
Barely.
I think we really got to embrace Pinterest a little more. Maybe I'll start checking it out.
All right. There you go. All right, Perry, well, that's brings us to the end of another great show.
All right, we're stumbling to the finish line. It was good chatting, Randy, and until next time, be brainy about your beauty.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.